Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor.
I'm Gorgon, and today we are super happy to have you guys here listening to us because we have Corey Pruitt, who you might know from Twitter as Up to Task, Task the Old Nerdy Bastard, that motherfucker, Task. We're very happy to have him on the show. He's been a good friend of ours for a while. He's one of the first people when I came into comic Twitter who was really just super kind to me and shared me into the community. He's been a great friend of Thor. We're happy to have him on. Task, how are you today?
What the fuck are you? This is Gorgon? Gorgon?
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
Boost yourself at all. I'm like, oh, talking to me. All right, that's cool. Nice to have you. Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited.
Of course. Yeah, man. Like Gorgon was saying, you know, we've been cool for a while and kind of same thing with me, you know, I don't know, you kind of really like introduced me into the community almost. And, you know, when I first started with, you know, talking comic books on Twitter, you gave me a follow and, you know, we started becoming friends and like it just really felt like I was being welcomed in the community. So it's kind of a full circle moment having you on the show. And like I said, we're super excited to get into all that stuff, get into your work, especially because we're big fans of it and we're super excited for what you got going on. But before we get into that, we want to reel it back just a little bit and kind of go back to Task's origin a little bit. So you've said that you started reading comics at around 3 years old, grew up in Sacramento. You said that your upbringing was a little rough, but that you take that as a gift and a curse. So First question, I guess, going off of that is you started reading comics at 3 years old. Do you remember kind of what those early comics were, or necessarily maybe what was the comic that you really were like, oh my, like opened your eyes to comic books? You know what I mean? And could you also kind of unpack the whole gift and the curse thing?
I feel like this is a trick question because I don't read comics, not as young as
Well, if you did read comics, what was the first couple that you might have started with?
I can also talk later on where that came from. The whole
But, I'm gonna ask you. That was on the agenda.
I got you. So, when I was young, my parents broke up very, very early. Typical sob story, small violin. My parents broke up. My mom went this way. My dad went that way. I was kind of like in the middle. They didn't really know what too much to do with me. So we have a swap meet out here. My neighbor would go and buy stuff there. And one day he bought a garbage bag full of comic books. And he just dropped them off. And he was like, look, I just bought this whole bunch because I just wanted like two in here. He said that the whole thing. And so they just dropped it. He just said, hey, look, he can have these, like, whatever. And so I took them and I ran into my room. And that's actually how I learned how to read. I learned how to read reading X-Men. X-Men, and then there was Spider-Man. There was some DC Warlord.
Okay.
A lot of DC Warlord. Warlord, Hawkman, JSA. And that's probably why I love the JSA so much. Was like my early stuff on it, my early take on it. So I just pretty much would just go through those books. And I grew up in the hood, South Sacramento. I was born in Birmingham, Alabama, and then we moved out to Sacramento, and it was just the cheapest area to live, you know, like poverty, you know, and all the Black people were all in South Sac. And I grew up around like gang culture. And lots of and honestly, I think that's one of the main reasons why like I'm such a polarizing figure is because like a friend of mine said it best. He was like, Taz talks in comic book terms like a battle rapper.
I could see that for sure.
You know, I was listening to that, I was like, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I just usually from comic book nerd backgrounds that don't usually come from where I'm from. And So like growing up, it was kind of a combination of the two. Like I was like in the hood gangster rap culture, but I also read comic books at the same time. So a lot of dudes would say things, and I would say like, "Dog, I throw a cap shield at him or something." Like that.
I find it interesting, like that like we all come from different places, right? Cap in Ireland, who sadly can't be here with us today. Myself, who grew up in the middle of nowhere, West Texas. Buddy Thor here, right? Who grew up in Chicago and Cali. You, who grew up, you know, where you did in the South, and then Cali with it. Mm-hmm. So many of us in our generation, despite where we came from, some of our first comics were X-Men and Spider-Man. It almost seems like that's a canon event for our generation to get us into comics, right? For our time period.
100%. And for me, what led me to Marvel more, and this is just me. I tell people all the time, people think I hate DC. That's not the case. We all have preferences, and there's nothing wrong with preferences. I always relate comic book shit to sports. Like, I'm a Raider fan, unfortunately.
Let's go, Raiders, baby. I'm with you, Taz. I'm with you, brother.
Hold up. Does that mean there's a comic book character you're a fan of, unfortunately?
Actually, yes. Taskmaster. I get so much shit for being like a Taskmaster.
We were going to ask you about that, too. Because, I mean, I'm, you know, Fat Thor. So Thor's kind of my guy. Gorgon is the Venom guy. Cap, obviously Cap. And you kind of have your own kind of shtick character with Taskmaster. So I was wondering, how did that come up? Like, is Task really your favorite character? Like, how did that all come about?
It was funny because, you know, I grew up, like I said, like I've watched like drug dealers and gangsters. So, and I grew up watching Scarface and movies like Scarface, Goodfellas, Casino, New Jack City. So I kind of love the bad guy. I've always been a fan of the bad guys. So Namor, Doom, Magneto, Apocalypse, like I was always in love with them, but I couldn't choose one. Then this motherfucker with a skull face was like, "Dog, I'm pulling up, I'm fucking all of y'all up." Your own stuff. And I was watching it, I was like, "Yo, that's amazing." Like, he has Cap Shield, he has Swordmaster's sword, he has Hawkeye's bow and arrow. That's just so ill to me. And so, like, I wanted someone that was different. And so I just started, like, following everything Taskmaster did. I got his first appearance, which is wild because, the green cover, the Avengers cover that everyone, the one that sells the most, that's not even his first appearance. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, the trick question. What is Wolverine's first appearance? Everyone says Hulk 181, and it's not Hulk 181. It was the last page of Hulk 180. Mm-hmm. But Hulk 181 is the one that everyone always gets because he's on the cover and we see that. But that's not his first appearance. Same thing with Taskmaster. So I just grew up with him. And then everyone started calling me Taskmaster. And so, and even in schools, they're like, Taskmaster, Taskmaster. And then it just shortened to Task when I started, I did wrestling. I was a state champion in wrestling. And they were like, they call him Taskmaster because he could do any task that you need done. He could use whatever task you need done. So then it became just Task. Mm-hmm. And then that's been my name ever since. Like, I go by Task more than Corey. Like, only people that really call me Corey are my wife. And at work. Other than that, everyone calls me Task. So what it is. But yeah, my real name's Corey Pruitt.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners and watchers out there, make sure when we talk about his comics later that y'all go find them under that name. That is the name they are published out in at this time. Is that the name you're going to have those in the future staying published under as well?
Ah, yeah, that's such a good question, man. Listen,
tell you what, you let us know when you make a decision, and we'll make sure that we tweet out about it to like, hey, go buy his comics under this name now. If you change it.
I appreciate that. Listen, man, when it comes to the making comic book thing, it's hard for me because I don't do this for bit. You know, a lot of people do this because they're trying to make money, but I don't care about that. I just want to make dope shit. Like, that's all I care about. Like, so I don't even think about stuff like that. And it's something I need to. I definitely need to start, like, thinking about that. But as of, like, at the moment, like, I don't even consider myself a comic book writer, but growing up, that was one of the things that helped lead me to want to be one, was because I used to run a comic book store, Empire's Comics in Sacramento, California. I was homeless at the time, and the owner said, look, I got like this extra spot in the back. You could stay there, but I want you to help run the store. And I had no problem doing that. Like, I was like, oh, that's amazing. I'm around the stuff that I love all the time. So I was back there doing my thing. And a lot of people were shocked to see me. I tell these new people nowadays, you know, they act like, you know, Black people were always like prevalent in this circle. And I'm here to tell you, that's not the case. It wasn't that, like, it wasn't like that back in the days. I'm not saying there were none. Of course, there were some. But on the level it is now, like right now, like there's there's like Black comic conventions like DreamCon. There are Latino comic conventions and all for different type of ethnicities and cultures. It wasn't like that back then. Back then, it was just we had to do what they did. We had to do what they did. And you can tell when I show people old comics where there's like a lot of racism going on, you're thinking, oh my God, like, how was that published back then? And I tell people, like, dude, I'm letting you know that's how it was back then. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about us at all. They didn't care. They didn't care if we were offended at all. So, like, that's why when I show people like the old Ultimates comics and like, how they're making fun of gay people and stuff like that. They're like, oh my God, how was it? I'm like, man, y'all were not in the culture like y'all are now. That just is what it is. And while a lot of people see that as a bad thing, I tell people, no, this is a great thing. And let me tell you why. That means the world is changing. That means that the world is changing. That back then it was shitty. And now we could look back at that and be like, dude, that was crap. Mm-hmm. That was horrible. And now that will never fly again. So we learn, you know, if you don't learn from your history, you're doomed to repeat it. So it's good to actually physically see the progress happening instead of just being told it's happening. Like, you can actually see it. So, yeah, so that's where I came up with. And back then, people, you know, saw me. I was a Black guy. And they were just like, do Black people even read comics? And I will always say, well, obviously we do, because...
So as somebody who you know, grew up with that, and you grew up reading X-Men, right, like we all did, and X-Men has been kind of like, for the longest time, it was, you know, our largest social allegory we had for what was going on for marginalized people of all groups to relate to. Does God Loves, Man Kills hold a special place in your heart for what it did at kind of being a little more on the nose about that?
Of course. Absolutely, because I could relate to that so much, because I remember, I have a very vivid memory. I remember I was taking tests as a kid, and they said that, well, your son is reading at a very high reading level. And it was because from reading comics, like God Loves, Man Kills, different stuff like that. And they were like, well, we could try and put him in the classes early. And so they tried it, and I was the only Black kid in there, and kids used to make fun of my skin color. And they used to say, well, how come he's not like that? Was he painted and they couldn't scrape the skin off and things like that? It's unfortunate, but, you know, I have no regrets in life, because it's like it made me who I am today. And it also taught me to always be a good person, to not be what they are. And I learned that from actually reading X-Men books. From when they were like, well, why can't we just kill the humans? Well, why can't we just, you know, go back at them? And they're like, no, that's not what we are. We're not them. You're not them. Right. Let them do what they do. You're not them. And I learned that from Captain America. And that's what brought me over there to the Marvel side, because I saw characters that look like me. You know, I saw, you know, Sunspot. And how he was picked on for his skin color in his first appearance in New Mutants number one, and Storm, and I saw that, and then grew up, and then it was Bishop, and then they put him in a cartoon, and like, I'm seeing myself on the screen, and that was very, very important for me. And this is what I tell people, like, I'm a Marvel guy, and it's because I like color in my world. Mm-hmm. I that's me. I can't speak for no one else. I, Corey Pruitt, who grew up as a guy who was told these comics were not made for you, I like to see that's not the case. That I want to see that. And that's what I love about Marvel, was that they're not afraid to put the diversity in the front.
Right.
It's more than just having them there. There's difference between, well, we have them. No, they're in the front. They're right. With the Avengers. Look at the
Avengers. Like, there's a difference in inviting someone to be a part of something and actually including them in being a part of something, right? They're very much so included.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I love the question. I love that picture of the three people looking over a fence to look at like a game. And it's a tall person, a middle-sized person, and an even smaller person. Mm-hmm. And they're all standing on the same size boxes. And they said this is equality, even though the two other ones can't see over. But they're like, equality, they all have the same. And then but then they change it, and then the other ones have two boxes so that he can see over. And they're all on the same level. They're all on the same level, though, even though this one has a little more help, but that's because they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so stuff like that I learned from reading X-Men, and that's just the type of stuff I wanted to see. And that's just where I lean towards. Like, I played the Avengers game, and while, you know, you can say what you want about the Avengers game not being great, one thing I love is that Kamala Khan's right there.
Hell yeah.
Matter of fact, the game is about her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if y'all ever played that game.
I low key love that game. I know people hate on that game, but I, bro.
Listen, it's hard for me to talk about that game because my bias shines.
Yes, bro. I mean, you let me fly around like Thor throwing the hammer around. Like, come on, bro. Like, that's all I need. I'm good. The game could be ass cookies other than that. But if I can do that, you got my money, dude.
What? I'm just waiting for the new Spider-Man game so I can hopefully get to play as Venom. Like, I still have a hard dash of copium that, no, Eddie Brock's gonna be there. He's gonna be there. He's gonna be there. Like, I'm taking that copium down left and right every day.
Listen, man, I get upset about that, and I don't know how you feel, Gorgon, because I know you're the bigger Venom fan than me. I just don't like when anyone takes the suit and then calls themselves Venom. Don't like that.
It's interesting, right? Because it's that's an interesting topic for the run right now and how the last run ended, right? Mm-hmm. It's because Venom has always just meant whoever is carrying the suit. So we've always assumed that is the symbiote's name, right? We learned that the symbiote has a different name, mm-hmm. but it's just not like one we can actually perceive. So it's so the best we can do is call it Venom. So like, there's Venom the symbiote, but then there who is Venom when it's with a host as one unit, and it's almost this duality of being a host, right? Having who are you without it, and who are you with it?
100%. I've always said, I always like that, you know, we are Venom, and I told people, like, in my personal opinion, anyone with that Venom suit, I mean, with that exact symbiote, just because you're the host of it, that doesn't make you Venom. And that's how it was before. Because
right.
I tell people, the suit was with Spider-Man first. Be clear.
Right.
It was with Spider-Man first. Spider-Man didn't call himself Venom.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
He didn't call himself Venom. But then when the suit met with Eddie Brock, that was when the suit was like, yo, we are Venom together.
With Flash, it was I am, or I'm Agent uh-huh. Venom, and like he uh-huh. kind of felt like Flash kind of bullied him around a little bit for a while. Like it was a little bit interesting relationship with each of them. I think that's what makes it very unique in that regard.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the symbiote cell, I tell people all the time, like, Venom has to be the most successful villain in comic book history.
Probably by far.
Yeah.
And like, people
would say that's
true. And I say, dog, look, Venom has movies.
Plural.
Right.
And he's been featured. There are whole corners of the Marvel Universe just about him.
Right.
Just
now, about- we We had a symbiote episode a while back where we talked on that, right? Because it's about the exact thing, like how successful Venom is. It's weird that it came out of Spider-Man. And it's the reality is Venom's kind of been its own thing for a while.
100.
And the Cates run really kind of impacted that and like set the symbiotes aside and being like, no, we're detached. We're our own now. We're grown, right? In that regard. And it's, yeah, I don't know, because it's a... In the reality, if we analyze the run, the symbiote and Brock have been on a journey of being more anti-hero and hero for more of their time in written comic book history than they have as a villain. But their impact as a villain in that short time that it was, and what it did in the animated cartoon in the 90s left its freaking mark on history. Mm-hmm. You know, that everybody knows who Venom is. That's that bad guy in Spider-Man.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Yeah. Once again, why is this a conversation? Who has better villains, Batman or Spider-Man? Dude, shut up! It's Spider-Man. Now, one could argue that Batman has the most popular villain, Joker. Okay, sure, I'll give you that. But if you combine all of them, Spider-Man villains: Doc Ock, Green Goblin, Venom, Carnage. What are we talking about here? How is this a conversation? Like, what? Like Norman Osborn and stuff like that, like what you said about with the Clintars and like their relationship. That's something that I've always loved about Marvel. It's that, you know, some of their heroes, it's double-edged sword, as in you have all this power, but this is what it comes with. Like Iron Man could do all these things, but he could probably have a heart attack at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like things like that. And I love, like, one of the things that this is going to make you excited, Fat Thor. When I was pitching Thor to comic book people when I worked at a comic book shop, I said, there's a lot about Thor that is very important as a superhero that no other superhero has to go through. Mm-hmm. And people said, what's that? And I said, Thor has to actually live up to his name.
Damn right.
He has to. Superman can fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
Batman can fuck up. Thor fucks up, he loses his powers.
Right.
Yeah.
Thor and is the head that wears the crown. Mm-hmm. That's how we refer to him all the time, particularly since he became King Thor. Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. He has to, he can't make mistakes. He can't doubt himself. He can't fuck up. If he does, not only is his power stripped away, it's given to another motherfucker. Someone else walk around with not only his powers, but with his name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nigga, you're not Thor. I'm Thor.
Yeah.
I'm Thor now. Look at this.
But see, that's why I really love those stories, though. And I mean, we've talked about this plenty of times, and people who follow me or have watched our episodes know, like, that's what I really love about those stories about Thor doubting himself and like the unworthy Thor and Jane Foster Thor. That's what I really love about it, is because, like you said, like Thor is a person who always has to live up to his name. And he's someone who, and like, I think it's, I want to say it's the last page of Jason Aaron's run. It's one of my favorite pages of any Thor book, but it shows Thor walking into the throne room with Mjolnir sitting on the throne. And he has a little spiel. I can't remember it word for word, but something along the lines of, every day I come in here and I'm not sure if I'll be worthy to pick up this hammer. And like every day I have that doubt in me of whether I'll be able to pick it up. And then he picks it up and he says like, oh, I guess today will be king or whatever it is. But I just, that's really what I love about it. Cause like, I think you know, said it perfectly, is he's always living up to this, what he's supposed to be. And we have that great scene in Endgame with Frigga basically says that. And I love that line too, but you know, everyone is trying to live up to who they're supposed to be, who they think that they should be. But really the best we can do is just be who we are. And I think that's, like I said, Thor exemplifies that. And that's why I relate to him a lot and why I love him. And I know that's, you know, kind of similarly with you as well.
100%. I remember me and you talking about that. Still worthy, the hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Still worthy. I'm getting emotional because like I saw that scene differently, because, you know, I was really, really disappointed in a lot of people during Endgame when we saw Thor get fat. people are like, oh, they're making fun of fat people. And I'm like, I didn't catch that at all.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. What I caught that as someone who has lived with depression, I'm clinically diagnosed. I talk about it. I'm trying to become a person, you know, to speak about mental health, because I feel like in men in general, especially Black men, but mostly just men in general, mental health is not talked about enough, because in society we are taught that we are supposed to be tough and we're supposed to just take it all and just be a man about it. But it's like, no, we're human beings, and sometimes we fuck up. Sometimes we make a mistake, and sometimes we didn't even make the mistake, but we hold ourselves accountable. And that's what I saw with Thor. Thor did more damage and did more help than anybody in Infinity War, and the bad guys still won. And that wasn't on Thor, but you could tell Thor was like, I was supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. I had made the weapon that could have taken them out. But that one moment I had to gloat, like that one moment, you know, and you could tell that like fucked with him. You could tell. And because of that, he went into a depression state, and all he did was sit around, play video games and eat food. And us geeks and nerds, we know what that is. We know that. And I was like, this is so relatable to someone like me. Mm-hmm. And one thing I loved was that he still got out there. He still went out there, still did his thing, and he was freaking out, and he was panicking, and someone had to, like, you know, people got mad because Rocket was, like, slapping, like, no, Thor's like, yo, bro, I understand you're going through this, but the world's, like, about to end, like, pick your shit up and go.
Come here.
No, I think I'm having a panic attack.
Come here.
Yeah,
right here. We got work to do. We gotta get it going. Let's get going here. And every now and then, I'm the type of person, I need that kick in the pants. I need to be kicked and be like, yo, bro, I understand you're going through this, but you got a family. You got a life. Let's go. We got to get going. And I just love the scene after he talked with his mom and he called for the hammer. Still grabbed the hammer. I'm still worthy. Yeah, I lost everything. Yes, I'm overweight. Yes, I'm fat as fuck. I'm still worthy. I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And he was still there fighting. And the best part to me was when he called both hammers at the end and got that dope armor. And he says, all of that line, let's kill him properly this time. Oh, mm-hmm.
Ooh. Oh. Chills. Chills.
My dick got hard a little. Anyway. I love that line. Too much.
You and me both.
I know you were probably creaming in your seat, so I was like,
right. Full on torque, my man, full torqued. But I mean, you described it perfectly, though. And I mean, for those out there who don't know, I think we've talked about this on the show before. I've tweeted about it, but like you, exactly what you just said. That's the whole reason, like the whole fat Thor thing came about. It came from a joke between friends. Like I was like, oh, I look like fat Thor. But I, you know, honestly, I did. And that's what I felt when I saw it on screen as well. I was like, that's me. Like, I see myself. And when that scene, like you were just talking about, the still worthy, like that just affected me so hard. And I, you know, took on the Fat Thor kind of name, and it even pushed me. I went on this whole weight loss journey and just completely changed things around for me. And I know, like, to some people that might sound really cheesy and kind of lame, but that, like I said, that scene of the still worthy, and like you said, you said it perfectly, but at the end when he's all armored out, but I think it would have been very easy to make him just buff again when he was like powered up. Yeah. And that would made sense to everybody. But no, they kept him how he was. And I love that, because like you said, it's like he, no matter what he's going through, he had to step up. And that just really like inspired me so hard. So yeah, I really love that.
Not only did he step up, he didn't skip a beat. Mm-hmm. And everyone who was complaining, I was like, bro, that is the most accurate depiction of Thor.
Yeah, for real. Like, but yeah, as someone who's struggled with his weight all of his life and, you know, have really struggled with that, I really, like you said, I love that. And that kind of does bother me. And it did bother me when people, like, not, you know, obviously everyone perceives things their own way, but it's just like, how do you not get that? You know what I mean? And I hate like people right. saying that it was just for a joke and stuff when it's like, you know, for people like us, it was, we saw right. ourselves on screen and it was just like a very impactful moment, at least for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And like even fat jokes, like I get fat jokes to this day and like people are like, oh, that's rude. I'm like, no, that's reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's reality. That's what it is. People are like that. In fact, even people that we look up to. Like, look at what Lizzo goes through all the time. Like, from other celebrities. Like, that's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate. And, you know, but I like that because they didn't hold back on that. And they easily could have.
Yeah.
But that's a reality for us big people. And I love that Thor was still big when he went out there. He didn't skip one beat. He was still there. He was still holding it down. And that's important. You know, it's stuff like that is why I love Marvel, because characters can't, we do see their flaws. Mm-hmm. We do see them go through things where I got bigger. And we do see things like Iron Man giving up. People, and no offense to DC, but they don't go through shit like that. Like, they are the perfects. They are, we are the examples of what superheroics should be. And I agree 100%. They are the representation of what they should be. But some of us didn't have things perfectly. And some of us aren't considered perfect in reality. And some of us are flawed. And so that's what leads me to characters like Eddie Brock, who you have to ask yourself, is he a hero or is he a villain? I had a pitch that I pitched to Marvel about Venom. Gorgon's going to get excited at this.
Do tell.
Venom decides, you know what, Spidey? We should all be friends. We've been fighting each other for so long. We have beef with each other for so long. Enough with this beef. You know what? You are a hero. You are a hero of the city. But you need help. You need to be, like, rescuing people, you know, like, who are fighting, who are, like, rescuing babies out of exploding villains. You ain't got time to fight villains, so I'm just going to kill your villains. I'm going to kill them all. I'm going to kill all your villains. Wait, no. This is for you. You need to get better at this. You were too late to rescue that person down the street. Here, you were too busy killing fighting Shocker. Let me just take Shocker off the board for you.
I love that, honestly.
And then Spider-Man's like, no, you can't do that. He's like, wait, why not? You see all those people that Shocker killed? Shocker killed all those people. I'm just gonna kill them.
You know, I weirdly think with the modern relationship and how they progress to being friends, that story could probably still run if it were like Carnage okay. in modern day being like, no, guys, let's get along, because it would just be him being maniacal just to fuck with them like the whole better. Time. And better. It would be so sassy. I am here for this.
Just something like that. Like Spider-Man's like, wait. And then I can see someone like Wolverine being like, hey, bro, hey.
So he's got a point here.
Venom would just be standing there like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
He's Spidey being like, and then all of a sudden crime starts to go down because all the other villains are like, yo, Carnage is out here. And then Spider-Man is like kind of thinking like, damn, it is getting better. Damn. Like in that moment where he's like, should I have been doing this?
Like, the mind fuck on Peter honestly, Parker just a little bit.
I honestly low-key love that. You could have it like end like with him questioning that, like, maybe, you know, this is right, and then boom, and I like that. I think we need to start 100%. After we get off here, we need to start writing.
No, man, listen, and then, you know, the city starts to resent Spider-Man more because they're like, fam, you rescued me, but my grandma died during all that, and now all the crime's going down. Why didn't you do this?
Mm-hmm.
How many people died because you let Green Goblin live?
You need to calm down, J. Jonah Jameson. Okay.
Right.
You need to settle down.
A criminal. A miscreant. A masked marauder. A menace.
A menace.
Seriously. That's how Gorgon takes it so seriously. Like, yo, relax, bro. Relax. Because these characters are like family members. They're friends. Like, We care about them. And when people say things like, oh man, you're too invested, you're goddamn right, I'm too invested. I've been doing this for 35 plus years. The fuck? What are you talking about? I've been dealing with comics since before most of y'all been born. Y'all were swimming your dad's nutsack, and I was out here in these streets.
Literally living in the comic shop.
100%.
Yeah. So like,
yeah, this shit is my life. You're 100% correct. I used to think about that, like, oh man, I don't know, fictional characters. No, this is my life. This is what it is.
And well, I mean, in today's world, you know, comic books and they're like, it's just still crazy to me that like some, like your grandma could probably tell you who Thanos is. And like, that is insane. And like growing up reading comics, it was, you know, very niche, but at the same time, there's characters that everybody knows. And in this day and age, you know, comic books are really our modern day, like myths. And, you know, like back in the day they had Thor and Odin, like they're legit, you know? Yeah, exactly. They're like today's myths. So I think that, the comics affect a lot more things than people realize and influence a lot.
And always, I mean, for Christ's sakes, the Egyptians did comic books. That's all hieroglyphics are. They're comics.
That's a little way to look at that.
Yo, hey.
What happened?
You just...
Well, and like within that regard, like where he was saying, you know, comic books influence a lot of things, but a lot of things influence comic books. You've been very vocal about the fact that, like, you know, particularly with your comics, you want them to be very diverse. You've gone on saying that like Afropunks is very much like black representation in medieval and fantasy series. And then you have Leaders of the Free World, which has three issues out, which we're going to get into probably following this, because I've really enjoyed all of it so far. But you've made sure it has a lot of unique influences and a very diverse one. I was telling Thor before we got on about how, yeah, the whole Wukong thing comes from, you know, a Journey to the West, and was telling him how influential that's been throughout all kinds of pop culture, but particularly where like black culture and Asian culture directly overlapped, right, between the 1940s and up through the 80s was peak, where Wu-Tang kind of became the pinnacle of the face of it for everybody out there. In that, you've lived through being directly, you know, probably inspired from a lot of that growing up, right? Then and you've gone from that to rapping, and now you have a comic book out where you have your own direct amount of hip hop influence in it. So with all of this, what is your favorite way you've seen hip hop influence comic books?
Oh man, you guys have done your research. I like that energy. If you listen to a lot of 80s, early 90s hip hop, these were all nerd motherfuckers.
Right.
Listen to the first Wu-Tang album. These are nerds.
Oh yeah. Inspector Deck, dude, he's like the biggest nerd out of them all. I mean, honestly, probably Method Man, because that dude's collection.
I'm gonna say RZA. I mean,
they're all nerds. Like you said, they're all nerds. Who's the biggest?
Like, if you listen to Wu, like their first albums, they make so many comic book references. Mm-hmm. And so, like Ghostface goes by Tony Stark and things like that. Like these were that was prevalent back then. Method Man is still a comic geek to this day. He's trying to play Bishop, and he don't look like Bishop at all. I said,
yeah.
He appeared in he was actually in Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And it made an appearance, and he actually helped write, if I remember right, part of it. He's wrote a comic for Marvel. RZA has done guest appearances, done music for some of the Marvel shows, like also wrote comics. Like they are heavily invested in that blend of hip hop and pop culture through the comic book medium.
100%. Wu are geeks, and Wu-Tang were the first. Because even back then, when Hong Kong theater was really getting popular in black culture, you know, that was considered some geek shit back then, like watching the old Jackie Chans and watching, you know, China Inn and stuff like that. And Wu-Tang said, we're going to combine the two. We're going to combine our love for this culture and combine our love for this culture. And I'm going to get emotional again, but that's okay. 1993.
The safe space task.
No. My therapist has told me that, you know, I've been taught for my years that men don't show emotions. And because of that, I think that helped me, well, not really helped me, but like led me to have an anger because I just had so much pent in. Mm-hmm. So I just been letting it out now, and it's uncomfortable at times, especially since I know people are going to be watching this, and a lot of people like to use things like this against me, but you know what? I don't care anymore. This is my truth. 1993, it was Christmas, and my mom really couldn't afford to get us a lot of things. So she got me three small things that changed my life. She got me X-Men number one, and she got me two hip-hop albums. She got me the first Enter the 36 Chambers album and Midnight Marauders by Tribe Called Quest.
Ooh. Okay. Wow. That's a...
Those albums came out the same day, by the way.
Yeah.
Bro, I would lose my mind if I got that for Christmas right now at 39 years old. Are you kidding
for
me?
Real,
I
was like...
Yeah.
30 years ago, I'll take that now. So, yeah, so she got those three things to me. And I remember she was very apologetic about it. Like, she was very, I'm sorry, you know, all the other kids are getting action figures, Sega Genesis, SNES systems. I'm sorry, I called it SNES, Super Nintendo, I'll call it SNES. getting the SNES system and all that, and Game Boys. And, like, she was like, I basically got him some pieces of paper and these tapes. But that, like... And that changed my life. Like, I was like, yo, this is what it is right here. This is it right here. Whatever it is in life, this is my life right here. And it's just been that way ever since. I've always, like, listened to hip-hop and read comic books. And it wasn't until the early 2000s when I heard about a man named Shinichiro Watanabe. You know who that is?
I do.
Okay. Anime guy. Made Cowboy Bebop.
Yep. Okay.
He says, have you watched? I know Gorgon does. Fat Thor, do you know who that, you know, Cowboy Bebop?
I've watched a couple episodes of Cowboy Bebop, but I'm by no means like an expert or anything like that.
So what he did, and Task probably about to get into this, but what he did with music was game changing for animation in it. And then he went on to do something called Samurai Champloo, which was like that pinnacle of where the overlap has been.
It was over, like, dude. So Fat Thor, for people who don't know, Shinichiro Watanabe is a anime creator, and everything that he does, there's a musical theme to it. And when you hear it on paper, you're like, well, that's stupid. Well, that's silly. That wouldn't work. But he makes it work. Cowboy Bebop was space fantasy and jazz. And you're thinking to yourself, how does that combine? But watch the anime, you're like, okay. And it's well done. And Fat Thor, have you not seen Samurai Champloo?
I have not.
Jesus Christ.
He uses two different musical styles for the two different main characters that are in it, right? And the record skip will shift as it animates and like shifts them. Mm-hmm. Overlapping with who's being animated in the moment for the way they're fighting. It is this crazy blend that when you hear it the first time, you're like, what? But then you watch it at the same time and you're like, oh my God, I get it.
Well, you know, I'm a huge music nerd. So, I mean, if it's music animation, let's go. I'm writing it down right now.
Samurai Champloo is medieval samurais. So like 1600 Edo era samurais and hip hop. And it's done insanely well, like to the point where you're just like, this should not make sense, but it does. And there's two different samurais in there. There's Mugen, who is like, he's a break dancing, like he's very wild style, like he would be the ODB of the group.
Okay.
He grew up in the slums and where he had to fight on the streets to learn his swordsmanship style.
And because of that, like, no one else knows how to fight. Because I used to be really big in the samurai culture, kind of sort of still am. But they have a very disciplined style. Very, very disciplined. And his style was not disciplined at all. Like, it's wild. It's crazy. And so all these other samurais are getting their asses kicked. because they're just like, there's no like discipline to this. There's no style. He's just flailing.
He's a madman.
Yeah, pretty much. And then there's Jin, who is that more traditional style. And when Mugen is fighting, the beat picks up and it's fast. It's... When Jin comes, it slows down a little bit, but you can like nod your head to it. And it just all works well. It's like almost a story of how hip hop was created, and also just combined with Japanese samurai. So when I started writing Leaders of the Free World, I listened to music when I write. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was important for my readers to know what I was listening to when I came up with this thing. So on every, I started with every single page. On every single page, I would post on there the surreal mix of what I was listening to at that time that led me to that. Like the part where, you know, Kong and his friend are flying to the Oracle Theater in Oakland. And he says, let's go above the clouds, because Above the Clouds came on while I was playing, while I was writing it. Mm-hmm. And I was, okay, that's dope. Of course you can tell from my comic surreals, like, my guy.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know if you can tell from my background today, but like,
okay.
Yeah, he's got moonshine. I'm a Dr. Seance guy. I like Dr. Seance. But honestly, this is a perfect segue though into what we want to talk about next. So let's get into Leaders of the Free World. We have read these issues. We have been fans of this for a while now. I want to say, what was it, 2020, 2021, that the last issue 3 came out? And you've already hit it, talked about this a little bit with the other stuff that we were discussing, but you said that, you know, the driving force behind Leaders is representation and inclusivity. And you can really feel that in basically every page of the book. And I mean, the whole premise of the book is all of these people from all around the world coming together in a world where nations are not friends with each other. Like in this world, there are other super people. And so they're not allowed to operate in other countries. Like if you have superpowers. So
yes.
We want to kind of get into this a little bit. You've talked about that this run, or, you know, this idea was heavily inspired by Grant Morrison's JLA. So I wanted to ask, like, what about that run specifically really kind of struck a chord for you? And how did this all come together into Leaders of the Free World?
Yes, sir. Great question. My Marvel heads, don't shoot me. JLA is the pinnacle. They are. Let's be clear.
Mm-hmm.
I will always be an Avengers guy to the day I die. X-Men, that's my life. That's my shit right there. But the pinnacle of superheroics, I have to give it to JLA, because they are, like, let's be clear, like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, for example, Michael Jordan, considered the standard. I'm still a Laker fan. Magic, that's my guy. Magic, you know, Matt Johnson. But there's nothing wrong with saying, yeah, that was it. So the JLA Grant Morrison run is the type of comic that I would offer to someone who says, I've never read a superhero comic book team before. What should I try? Grant Morrison, JLA, 100%. And so with that, one thing I loved about it, because people, I'm so old, I remember when the JLA was announced. And believe it or not, because it's hard to think about it, people didn't like it at first.
No, they didn't.
I know. And someone made a good point. First of all, Kal Rayner had just become a Green Lantern, so they're like, you're just going to throw this new motherfucker on the team? Wally hadn't been Flash for that long. People still consider him to be Kid Flash, and they hadn't accepted that he was the Flash. Now they're still like waiting for Barry to come back. Like,
not my Flash.
Yeah, not my Flash. Oh yeah, 100%. So then they're like, all right, you got a Teen Titan in here, and you have Aquaman. What is he gonna do? And Batman, like. Batman on a team with a Green Lantern and Superman and Martian Manhunter, what is he going to do? And Grant Morrison showed us exactly what he would do and how it would be done. One of the things that Grant Morrison did best is the whole world is in danger right now. So when the whole world is in danger, you're going to have this person over here handling this. You're going to have this person over here doing this. You're going to have this person over here doing that. And it all comes together as one big story. And that's what JLA did well. Even before then, the Avengers will all just show up to stop one thing. Like, oh, everything's happening right here. So we're just going to go right here and fight it as a group. With JLA, they were like, we got to split up. And mm-hmm. we're so powerful that solo, we can handle shit over here. So that's kind of the vibe I was trying to go with when I created this team. When I created Leaders, I grew up in California, a.k.a. Diet Mexico. I always say, like, like, it is. Like, we are in Mexico. Los Angeles, that's a Spanish word.
Literally.
That's a Spanish word.
I'll tell you,
I'm from Texas. I feel you. So,
yeah.
You're in Mexico, Junior.
Yeah.
Bro, we are Tejas, okay?
I gotta say, when I moved out here to California, I didn't realize that I never had actual Mexican food before. I was holy shit. Like, this is a whole, like, I mean, we got taco places back home in Chicago, don't get me wrong, but it's on another level out here. I was like, it legit is a whole different thing.
And you're in SoCal, so, like, you're getting, like, the fresh, authentic stuff.
Dude, Birrio Taco, we were talking about earlier, I lost all that weight. Well, I gained a lot of it back from them fucking tacos, dude, because, woo!
Hey, man, I married a Latina. Who you talking to?
You know what I'm talking about.
So you married a Latina, so does that mean you have a special place for Medic? Is... Because I'm gonna be honest, I saw Medic on the screen when I remember reading the first time, and I was like, that, you know what, I would fold for this woman. Like, oh my god.
Hey man, I like women who can kick my ass. I say it all the time. Like,
same.
I'll be watching boxing. Alicia Baumgartner, who is like, she has like 5 championship belts. I say all the time, like, I want this woman to kick my fucking ass. I wanted to do it, and I would let her do it and be like, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank but, you, ma'am.
The creation of Medic comes from my love of fighting games. I'm a big fighting game fan. That reminds me of that Twitter post that went viral where the guy was like, have you ever had a racist moment, but it was funny? And someone said, a guy said that, why are all black people good at Mortal Kombat? And I had to laugh so hard because I will fuck somebody up in Mortal Kombat. Don't play with me.
I'm a Soul Calibur 5 man.
Okay. Shout out to Soul Calibur. I mean, I'm waiting for the next one. We got to wait for Tekken to drop and then maybe the next Soul Calibur. But
6 might actually end up being the last. It didn't do as good as they wanted it to be. They said it might end up being the last.
Yeah, the last one... The last one got beat out by Street Fighter. It came out, you know, the top three rules.
Way too close together.
Top three rules of business: location, location, location. You notice Mortal Kombat 1 made Tekken 8 tuck its chain. Tekken 8 was supposed to come out this year.
It's a hell no.
Smart move. Honestly, yeah. Smart move. I would have done the same.
Yeah, 2024. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's a smart move. Because them Netherrealm people don't play. But Medic comes from my love of fighting game women that could fuck you up. I created her because I wanted, first of all, one of my best friends is Filipino. And he said, name me some Filipino heroes. And I had trouble. This was before Wave got to Marvel. And even though Wave is great, I'm kind of like, is that really it? Like, right. I had to think about that. And that's mm-hmm. the whole concept of my team. I had a friend from India who had an Indian family. And he said, how many Indian superheroes are they? And I had to stop and think. And I'm thinking to myself, there should be a lot of Indian superheroes. They like have a huge percentage of the world population.
Yeah, literally.
Like, they're like 3-4% of the world population in just that small area, you would think.
There'd be a couple,
like at least a lot more.
Yeah. And so
things like that was what helped me do the team, but I also didn't want them to just be diverse. I wanted their diversity to be a part of the story,
right? Authentic.
So, Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, genuine. And so I created the idea, like, what if they're forced to come together? And we learned that we're better together than separate. And so I came up with the idea, like, what if these superheroes are not allowed to operate kind of like on some X-Men shit? Mm-hmm. These superheroes are not allowed to operate outside of their country. And my friend who was helping me out with this, he was like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why would they care? And I said, first of all, we're humans. We fuck everything up. We are destined for destruction. That's why I love in the Sandman comic, you know, he has all his family members and this destruction who was in the Sandman's family, and he quit being destruction because he gave it to mankind. Right. Like, yeah, we are our own destruction. And so I was like, okay, so something must have happened. So I said, what if, you know, of course, if superheroes existed, these countries are going to try and take over. Like, if Vladimir Putin, if a Superman character was created by Vladimir Putin, we already know what he's going to do. We know what time it is. Like, and so I said, what if something happened? Like, all these places went to war and they all have their own superheroes, and like, it ended up fucking up a huge chunk of the population. And so everyone just decided no one can operate outside. You operate in your respective place, which, okay, cool, I understand that. But what happens when the world is taken over and only a handful of people who are from all over are the only ones that can help us? And that's where I came up with the concept of leaders of the free world, where they're like, we have to do what we have to do.
Right.
To save the world, we have to rely on each other. Mm-hmm. And that's why I also came up with Dr. Seance. One of my biggest arguments as a kid, because like I told you guys, I love the villain. Mm-hmm. I love the villain. The villain character is where I'm at. And I always said to myself, like, for example, during Absolute Carnage, that story arc, I said to myself, where are the villains? Like, the whole world is in danger. That would include you. You would think villains would be like, yo, man, let's put everything aside. Mm-hmm. You know that picture of like the Bloods and the Crips tying the rags together? Like, look, man, we got bigger fish to fry right now. I want to kill all of you, but I would rather live too.
Yeah, there were only a few in some of the one-shot sections that really hopped in there. I think that was something I really liked about King in Black, right, is we had a whole run there with Taskmaster and all of them and all they were doing, right? Like, it's like, we're going to show what's going on with the villains a little bit here. Like, might as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. And I want to see more of that. Like, where's Doom? Like, where's Doom at? I feel like Doom would want to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm. He had a whole one shot in it with him and Tony Stark for Christmas. Yeah.
Oh, with Santa, dude, that was so dope.
I remember that was so. But no, like, but things like that, I want more of that. Like, mm-hmm. Where are the bad guys doing this? Because Marvel has some powerful bad guys that can really like assist, like Diablo, like someone like him. Like, where's Diablo at? Like, where's Count Nefaria at? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the bad guys.
Deep cuts.
Right. Oh yeah. I'm a villain guy. Yeah. I like.
I get in that same vein of it all, right? Like, with this whole section of Leaders of the Free World, right? Like, how diverse and all these different people are. And you mentioning bad guys. Did you like the Union when it came out for a little bit in King in Black? Because we got, I think it was 4 issues of that, and then we haven't seen them since. Like, where are they? But it had villains, it had heroes, people who like forced to be on a freaking team together. Right. Yes. It had internal espionage and takedown all in the middle of a global crisis. And we only got 4 issues.
Well, it was supposed to be ongoing, and that was when they were canceling a bunch of stuff. Like,
left and right.
Like, one of the things I hated was during Empire, that E-M-P-Y-R-E, we didn't get the Thor story that was supposed to come out with that, where Thor goes and finds his real mother, Gaia. And
we're going to start another controversy here, Tusk.
doing this. I'm not doing this.
Do I hear Jason Aaron yelling Phoenix in the background?
You don't read comics. What do you know?
Yeah. No, no, no. To be clear, though, Gaia is Thor's birth mother.
Thank you. Thank you. Like, fuck out of it. Anyways, the story was him going to visit Gaia, and because at the end of Empire, he shows up and does all these Gaia powers, and people are like, "What? Wait, what? What?" Mm-hmm. I was like, "Oh yeah, that's Gaia's son."
Duh,
Gaia's son. I have a character on there, Eco. Mm-hmm. In fact, let me just break down every character. I think that's the best way to do.
Let's go through it. Yes.
Okay. Let's start out with Surreal, the Monkey King. I love Thor, Hercules. I love the idea of introducing actual mythology characters into our superhero world, because that's exactly what they were. They were the comic books, so on and so forth, of their time. So I had Wukong there, and I did a lot of research, and the guy who was helping me out with it was telling me the story of the Monkey King and blah, 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 blah. And I said, so the main thing is that the Monkey King is always of Chinese descent. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, what if he was Chinese, but in America? And he froze and he was like, I mean, I guess that could make sense. Like, and I was like, yeah, because especially like in San Francisco, it's just a bunch of people who had imported over here from China who were here for the gold rush. Like, to me, that would make sense that, you know, go ahead.
So in that regard, since you're pulling him from the lore, right? So in traditional lore, Sun Wukong's kind of a pain in the ass to the other gods, right? Yeah. And he's like quintuple immortal, right? from grabbing immortal things from all these other different ones, being like, okay, what are you going to do? Like, literally cannot die. Is Surreal protected with immortality?
So here's the deal with that. I did some research and I found out a way that they could do it, because the guy told me, he said they never really explained. He said, well, they say that he's immortal, but he said, but there are other ways that they interpreted it, is that his immortality stems from kind of on some dead man shit. They're like, if one of them gets hurt really badly, the essence could go into someone else and pass on. So he's still alive, but he's just in someone else. But this time with Surreal, he went into a baby. And so the baby is, you know, is grown up that way. So all the other villains are like, yeah, we finally defeated Wukong. But they don't know that, you know, he's just this teenager now. And he's growing up in this world where he is supposed to be the best. But he's in this world where there are other superhero people, kids, who could do all these great and amazing things. And he's just like, I'm this dude with a tail and a staff. What can I do? And throughout the book, you learn more and more. You see him start to realize how powerful he really is. Like when he first starts using speed, and he's like, right, dude, how to fast? Like, what? And then like he clones himself, like, and he's like, dude, I didn't even know I could do all of this. Like, he's learning it because he hasn't been in battles. And he's learning how powerful he is, and he's gonna get too cocky at times. He's gonna get a little too arrogant, and that's something I'm looking forward to explore, is what makes him different than the other Monkey Kings. I have a future story with him where he goes to an astral plane where he meets the other Monkey Kings, all the other people who have had the mantle, and they're like in some kind of place, like kind of like where the Black Panthers go in the Land of the Dead. He's learning from them, and they're like, no, you have to do things this traditional way in the ancient Chinese form. And he was like, but I'm not out there like that. I'm on the West Coast. I'm in California, and I'm in here. This is how it's done here, blah, 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 blah. They're like, no, you have to stick.
Very Soul Calibur of you. I'm into this.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So every one of my characters, I wanted them to have something about them that is just different than just their powers. With Surreal, is the question is, you're given this power, but you're told you have to do it this way. But you know that doesn't make you who you are. And what do? Do you stick with the tradition, or do you just find your own path and do your own way? And that's what I'm, you know, trying to teach people with Surreal. So that's Surreal. Then there's Eco. Eco is special to me because I wanted to make a Black character. And this is something that I could say. I look at a lot of independent writers, and I look at their black characters, and they all, a lot of them seem the same to me. They usually always are very Superman like. They all like have capes, and they all could like lift and do all these things. And I was thinking, what if I did the exact opposite? What if my black character, first of all, I love that he doesn't wear shoes. Because I feel like since he's one with nature, he wants to actually touch the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Like he wants to actually feel it and touch it. And I wanted his story to be, you know, you are destined to be the best. But what if at first you didn't really want to? Like, that's not my life. That's not what I want to do. I want to do this instead. And it's basically saying, like, we have great power, great responsibility. Like, you have to help. If not, the world's going to die. Like, the world's going to end. So we see Eco start to come into who he is with the help of his mother, who is Gaia, which means he's Thor's brother, but we'll get there.
True half-brother, at least.
A half-brother, yeah, 100%. But we'll get to that later on.
I'll say, is Odin showing up here, or what are we talking about here now?
That's 100%. But I did kind of base off of people not knowing that Gaia is Thor's mom's like that. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that conversation. So with Eco, his powers are basically Mother Nature's. So anything that's natural, like he has command over, even from like animal and plant life and like the oceans and weather. And it's him having to become creative to fight, because his powers aren't simply, I could just punch you or I could shoot you. I have to actually get creative with how I decide to stop people from creating giant fists out of the ground, or having a giant whale eat you, or, you know, creating a Sharknado, stuff like that, like fun things like that. Like, he's a very fun character. And I gave him dreads, and I kind of I'm not a fan now, because like now, like every new black character all has dreads now. And I'm like,
I did it first.
Snap. So I was thinking of changing it, but we'll see. So then we have Medic, who stems from my love of video game characters and video game women. I wanted a character who is military, very serious about what they do, and is conflicted with Medic. Her parents are both angels. And, you know, I grew up in a kind of sort of religious background. And if you know about like religion like that, you know that like the angels weren't really like nice people. They were like God's right hand of death. Like, when you see an angel, oh shit, it's going down. And so she is kind of a combat. She has two different sides to her. She has the angel of death. She's here to like fuck everything up, but she could also heal at the same time. And so it's a combination. You know, one of my favorite sayings, are you a builder or are you a destroyer? Which one are you? And so that's kind of her duality, as in, am I here to destroy shit or am I here to build? And she, and you'll see her like, you know, bounce back and forth between healing and fucking shit up. And she has angel intuition, as in like, she could kind of sort of see where like fights are going. She could see where to like block. She could see kind of where to fight and pressure points and stuff like that. But she could also see that in things like buildings. She could say, okay, it's weak right here. This is the spot, kind of on some Karnak shit. Mm-hmm. So, which I love as well, Karnak. I'm a big fan of Karnak. And so that was my creation for her. Then there's the Tech Twins. In this comic, I wanted humans on the team. I wanted humans who didn't get the injection, didn't get powers. And matter of fact, they hate people with powers. And they get, and in the third issue, you find out why. And they're like, we don't need superpowers. We don't need these people. We could do it ourselves. And we're the example of that. And so they are the tech people. I also wanted it to be, because when we think of tech, I wanted it to be at a place where we wouldn't even think there were tech will be there. And that's why I chose Samoa Also, because someone said, can you name a Samoan superhero? And all I could think of was Mondo and the X-Men. And I was like, yeah, I guess it is just Mondo. Mm-hmm. Like, and so I just had to, oh, go ahead.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Oh,
yeah. And so I decided to make them from there. And while I was writing the character, I had the girl just create a dog. Like, and I liked the dog so much. I was like, dude, I'm throwing the dog on the team.
I was going to ask you about Doohickey, dude. I love that character. I know I said Dr. Seance is probably my favorite, but Doohickey's a close second. I got to find what you call them specifically, but like a Cy-Corgi or whatever.
Oh, yeah, a Cyborgy?
Yeah, Cyborgy. I love that. I thought that was so funny.
Doohickey the Cyborgy. Yeah. I created him while I was hella high, right?
Off them edibles.
I was like, my greatest creative mind is when I am high as balls, and I was just like, what if there's a dog on the team?
And the dog, and he's a weapon.
And the dog can like become anything. Anything. And my wife is looking at me like, man.
Task like anything.
So that's what I came up with. It was all fun and games, and he ended up becoming one of the most popular ones. So I have them. Then I have Dr. Seance, who people love. I love supervillains once again. I love Dr. Doom. I love Dr. Strange. I love magic shit. And I wanted a magician on the team, but I didn't want him to just be a typical magician. So I was like, what can I do? So I said, what if he is like, how do I explain this? You know when they make these comic events and there's like one main bad guy that like everyone has to build up the 6 issues to fight him? I said, what if that him was on the team? Like, Dr. Seance is like last boss level. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, like, he's pretty much like fucking up the whole team. Like, dude, shut up. Tossing him around.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted him to give off that energy, as in, like, I'm not afraid of any of you. I could kill any one of you anytime I want. And the only reason why you're around is because you're serving me. Mm-hmm. And every now and then he'll say, like, yes, you will serve well in my army. Yes, yes. Because Dr. Sounds, he's running the show. Like, this is all my shit.
I really love, too, not only just the concept of the character, but I really loved your dialogue for Dr. Seance. And he's got, like, this, like, he's, like, kind of laughs in between his sentences. And like you said, he's very powerful, and I definitely get that, like, you know, boss, like last level boss kind of vibe. But I also feel like this is a guy or entity, if you will, with a couple screws loose. And I really like that about him. He's like kind of quirky and like crazy, but also in, like you said, a very powerful way. I just thought that was really cool. And like I said, I really enjoyed the dialogue of Dr. Seance. It was scary, but also funny. Like, I was like, oh my God, this guy would absolutely destroy me. But like, he's funny about it, you know? And yeah, he throws out his little facts and stuff. I love that too.
I love the, I was reading, I was, what was it? Oh, I was, when I was writing Dr. Seance, I wanted him to have a certain way that he talked that made him stand out. And my wife was watching Jeopardy at the time. And and like they were asking all these tough questions and all this stuff, and I just thought, what if this dude was kind of sort of like a game show host, almost of sorts? Like, what if he was like, you know, like trivia, like the whole thing? Like, I'm not just going, because like his ego is so big, like I'm so much smarter than you, I'm so much more powerful than you, I'm so much smarter than you, and let me tell you why, even though you didn't even ask me. I'm still going to like explain to you about what I am and what I do. And so with Seance, I definitely wanted to do that because, you know, another one of my favorite movies is Mastermind, Megamind. And in Megamind, the villain is saving the day. That all of a sudden everyone loved the villain. So that's what Seance is with. He's like, hey, this could work in my favor. like, bruh, I could get the whole world on my side. And then if I do it, and at first he wants to do it by himself, but then he's like, but if I have people I'm standing with, that's going to help my credibility even more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so I definitely wanted to have that in there. One of my favorite lines was when Moonshine says, yo, I just want to be with everybody. And Cyril's like, we should hear her out. And they're like, why should we? And they're like, dude, you're still rocking with Seance. He tried to kill all of us. Seance is like, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's right. and stuff like that. And last but not least, with Moonshine. Okay.
So okay. I got a question on Moonshine, actually. Okay. I'm sure you're going to break it down. But so can you explain... So Icelandic and alien, how does that, so like, does she like half Icelandic, half alien? Like, how can she be from space and Iceland? That's my question.
100%.
And someone also calls her Southern?
Yes, yes, yes. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Let's break it down.
Okay, so let's talk about it. Okay, so with Moonshine, what happened with her, this is kind of a revelation. She was told that she was Icelandic, but you could tell that she has a Southern accent. So, you know, like, she's not, but that's what she was told. And that's what the world was told. But if you remember in the issue 3, in the beginning, Seance says, ah, the half breed. I'm not a half breed. And he was like, oh, they haven't told you yet. So basically, and also, if you notice, and this is stuff, little Easter eggs I put throughout the book. If you notice in the first issue, when the Godsend first land, Moonshine's not there with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. I did notice that, actually.
So you find out that Moonshine was their attempt at making a new race of people and combining them to like human / Godsend members. And she is the first, like, she's the first part of it. And the reason why is because you notice her powers work. Because remember the outreach, they said that there are powers can't work around the outreach, but she's doing just fine.
Right.
They even bring, I think Cyril even brings it up to her and says, well, the powers are supposed to be stopping everyone. How come you don't have this problem? And she's like, I don't know, like, but yeah, we find out that she was a genetic creation, kind of on some X-23 shit, to kind of make like the perfect Godsend member so that they could send them out to take out the outreach. And that's why she's able to do so much and fuck them up. But the problem is that she has substance abuse problems. And one of my favorite flaws of superheroes, you know, a lot of superheroes, like, they're weak to kryptonite. They're weak to wood, they're weak to the color yellow. And I'd like the idea, what if you're weak? What if you were this all-powerful person who could do all this damage, but you're a fuck up? That's the only problem. Like, your weakness is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Your weakness is yourself. So I've created Moonshine as someone who I also wanted a character that was hella powerful. That solo, she's powerful, but the team had to team up to take her out.
Mm-hmm.
And almost to their death. I wanted to have a character be humbled. And actually, Doohickey really did it. The other teams did the shit.
Very much so.
But they had to go through all that for Doohickey to go and get in there and take her out. But then that humbled her. She was like, wow, you guys actually did it. Now, wow, okay, maybe you guys are all right. Maybe y'all are cool. And so that really humbled her and said, you know what, maybe we are better together than we are separate. And she starts to learn more and more of her about herself. Like, she was told that she was Icelandic, but everyone's like, dude, you have a Southern accent. This doesn't make sense. Like, but no one ever really questioned it until Seance starts questioning it and saying it, because Seance knows.
Mm-hmm.
Seance, yeah, you're a half-breed. Yeah, that's why you're able to do all this stuff. Like, think about it. Like, your powers still work. So just different things like that we're building upon. I just wanted to create, you know, I loved Invincible.
The Book of Mark.
Oh, yeah, the book of, yeah. Grab your Bibles. The Book of Mark. And one thing I love that Robert Kirkman did was he would insert things that will make you question for a long time until the revelation finally happens. So I throw things in there to show character growth and to have people go along for the ride until the end, whenever the end is. So that's the team.
How long do you think y'all are going to be trying to plan out writing Leaders of the Free World for a minute? Because you have three other books coming up after it, right? You got Afro Punks, and then The Audacity, and what was
Sundown,
the other one?
Sundown Town.
Sundown Town, yeah, right. The vampire-themed one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to write until I could not do it anymore. Eli, my artist, who also lives in L.A., we actually met for the first time like last month. That was so crazy because like we had been making comics for like 5-6 years and we had never met. And we lived in the same state. I keep telling people California is huge. Like California is like 3 states in 1.
Bro, I'm from Texas. You ain't got to tell me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know already. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like I'm like, dude, like he, and not only is California like 3 different states, like LA, SoCal is like a different world. Like that is not a whole different world out there. Mm-hmm. And so we just never had a chance to do it, but my new job flew me out there for work and we were able to do that, and it was really, really good. So I'm down for him to do it as long as he's down to do it. We're gonna take a break after issue 4 because issue 4 is 50+ pages.
Okay.
And we are going out with a bang. Eli's getting like really, really big. Like doing this comic has got opened a lot of new doors for him. And they want him doing like storyboard stuff for like movies. Awesome.
Oh, hell and, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Taz is like, yeah, I guess it's awesome, but
but it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Let me be clear. I'm an open book. I was hating at first. I'm not going to lie. I was hating at first. I'm like, motherfucker. What about this? And he said, oh, no, I'm always down to do the leaders. And I was like, that's bullshit. Once they start to, like, really get you going, that's what you're going to be doing. And I talked to my therapist about it. And my therapist said, you should be happy for him. And I was like, well, I am. He was like, it don't seem like you are. I was like, no, I am. I'm just, and he said, I'm just going to say it. You're being selfish. Yeah, I am. And he was like, 100%. I gave in. I was like, yeah, I am being selfish. And he was like, I hate to say this to you. You don't own that man. You don't own him. And if he wants to go and do something, you should be happy for him. Like, you helped him get there. That's something that you accomplished. And that was something that took years, like not years, but like months of therapy. Now I'm excited for him. I'm happy for him. And that's one of the only main reasons why I decided to, you know, start writing. And that's what my teachers, my therapist said. He said, well, why don't you do something else? He's doing something else. Why don't you do something else? And so I was watching Game of Thrones and I was like, where the niggas at? Where are the black people? They're like Lord of the Rings. I felt the same way. And I was like, I feel like we're not accepted in this space yet, which I don't know, because it comes from European backgrounds and stuff, so I kind of get that. But we're still fans of this stuff. And so I created the idea of the Afro Punks of, you know, my love for Battle Chasers, one of my favorite comics from Joe Mad. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know what? Let's just have fun with this one. I'm not trying to be like overly serious. Let's just have fun. And Afro Punks is hilarious. The whole comic is just, let's just have fun. It's kind of like, reminds me of Next Wave a little bit. That's a deep cut for those of y'all. Mm-hmm. Next Wave. You know, just me having fun with these characters that I created. And with some medieval backgrounds. That comic is actually almost done.
Nice.
By the time I do the Kickstarter for it, the comic is going to be done. So it could just come straight out. So I'm excited for folks to hear and to feel that one too. With Sundown Town, I was listening to Scott Snyder, who does a teaching, a school and teaching comic book stuff. And he said that he decided to jump into horror just to test out his writing to see, like, he said, I don't want to be just known as the superhero writer. I want to be known as a writer. Like, I could write whatever you need. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, I dare you guys to challenge yourselves to write a horror story. And so I came up with the concept of, because I've always said, like, in a world of zombies, what about, like, the other creatures of the night that also feast on humans? They're fucked.
Yeah,
right.
They're fucked. They're like, well, shit. What about us?
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So to me, I was like, what if I created a world where, like, these vicious creatures and monsters were like, bruh, we are in trouble, you know? And so they kind of start, like, treating humans like cattle. Like, we have to protect the cattle. We have to protect them. But this time the cattle could actually talk back.
Yeah. So
Sundown Town came from that concept. I don't know if you guys know what an actual Sundown Town is.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Texas.
You live in Texas. I don't know why I keep kidding. You're probably gonna
I live in Oklahoma now, which is actually worse. I am very lucky to live in Tulsa, which feels like a city that wouldn't belong here with the amount of progress it's made and trying to bring awareness to what happened at the massacre of Black Wall Street, right? It's very different than the rest of the state, but mm-hmm. but there are parts of this state that it's kind of known, if you talk to people in OKC and Tulsa, that to this day, we're like, that is not a safe place if you're a person of color. That is not a safe place if you're LGBTQ+. I mean, I went to the river with some friends a while back, and mm-hmm. I got accosted, had rocks thrown at me, I and everything. Think just for wearing a rainbow pride bandana around my neck. Jesus. Right. That is Oklahoma. So that is where I am at, my friend. I Sundown Town's right down the street.
Yes, but for the listeners who probably don't know, a Sundown Town was a town that were in, like, the early 1900s. Where basically it was illegal to be outside after 6 p.m. if you were black. So that's why it's called Sundown Town. When the sun went down, if you were still outside and you were black, you could get arrested. And that was one of the main reasons for the creation of the Green Book, the movie that won the Oscar. The Green Book was created for black people where they could travel comfortably. And this was kind of me kind of flipping the term, because Sundown Town is also, like, when the sun is down, that's the only time when vampires could come out.
Mm-hmm.
And the vampires and the creatures of the night that are inhabiting this area are of black descent, because they're monsters, but at one point they were all humans. So I don't think the racism would go out the door simply because now they're the same thing. I think that it will be amplified. Like, I could see there being, like, a society of all white clans vampires that are like, we don't fuck with black vampires at all. Like, we don't fuck with those, their kind, and stuff like that. So all of those type of things that, you know, I always wanted to talk about, racism and class wars, but I wanted to do it in a way where comic books and, like, fantasy combine. So mm-hmm. I'm doing that a lot with Sundown Town, where it just shows that sometimes the representation goes even beyond humanity. And, like, I've always said, like, I feel like, you know, I love the Fenris twins from the X-Men, because I'm like, dude, there should be racist mutants. Like, I feel like there will be racist mutants. Like, even mutants are like, yeah, we don't fuck with them. Where's the Hotep mutant? Me and my black friends were like, dude, this should be like, where's the who's the Muslim Hotep poofy wearing that hates the white mutants? Like, I said it would be Bishop. And it was like, no, we're all
like, who? Settle down.
So stuff like that, and like just conversations. And last but not least, the audacity. The audacity is fun. I love writing the audacity. I wanted to write a story about supervillains because, you know, I love supervillains. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I just don't want to write just about supervillains. So basically, and this is exclusive. I don't think anyone has been told this. So the whole concept of the audacity is that they're this group of supervillains who want to make it to the big leagues. They want to be recognized by the top. And the name of that group is called Your Superiors. They're the best. They're the like the masters of evil of the world. They're like, we want to be a part of this club. Like, we need to be with them. So they're like, we're going to do something so insane and so heinous that they have no choice but to pay attention to us. Mm. They pull it off. And all the other villains of the world are like, wow, they pulled it off. Like, wow, look at this. Wow, wow. And so they end up becoming celebrities, but they piss the superheroes off so much, the superheroes say, well, fine, we're just going to start killing the villains now. Fuck y'all niggas. And the villains are like, wait, what? You're not supposed to kill us. And now the villains are mad at the audacity, like, y'all fucked this up. You need to fix it. So now the audacity are like, fuck, well, that's where the heroes kind of thought.
Yeah.
But that's been for me watching the Suicide Squad movies, and I love both Suicide Squad movies, but I have a huge complaint. James Gunn and David Ayer did a bad job of convincing me that these are bad guys.
I can agree with that. I never really thought about it like that, but yeah, they're all very, very likable.
They did nothing bad guy-ish throughout both films. Nothing. Nothing. I was like, dude, the only reason why they're called bad guys is because you just told us they are. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Like, King Shark ate that one, dude.
Sorry, I mean, that thing with it.
I'm just saying.
No, you're wrong. You're not wrong. They killed all those people too.
Yeah, I was saying they kill a lot of people.
That was because they thought that they were pointing the wrong direction. I thought it was funny. They kind of just let that go. Like, they're like, ah, that's cool. You guys can roll with it.
Yeah, literally, like the whole resistance force for like this country.
But like, other than that, like, I would have had it been like, if I wrote that, they found out that they killed the wrong battalion. They're like, well, fuck, we gotta kill all these people now. And they're like, wait, we don't need to. They're like, no, they're gonna snitch on us. And so that's kind of where my team is at. We're like, mm-hmm. I want them to be villains. I want them to be villainous. Like, the way they do things, the way they move, like, they're still villains, but I want you to root for the villain. Mm-hmm. And that just comes from good writing. Like, Scarface is an evil motherfucker.
Yeah. But you still like him.
Yeah. And I think Marvel did a really good job with Thanos on that. Like, Thanos, like sometimes you're like, yeah, get them niggas, man. Thanos was putting the work in, and like, so I was kind of just testing myself to say, how can I make someone like the villain but make them still be villainous? Mm-hmm. I think that I don't want to say, I mean, I guess I'll say it, like, Venom, he's not villainous anymore, but at one point he was considered the villain, and he still had a huge following. Like, people still fucked with Venom. Like, they're like, yeah, even though he wants to eat Spider-Man's brains, he's a good guy.
He's got a point, actually. But no, I really love that. And I love, like, the take on villains. And like you just said, I feel like, at least for me, I feel like a big trope these days is, like you said, not necessarily making the villain likable, but, like, making them relatable. And I don't know, mm-hmm. I don't get me wrong, I love a good villain where you can, like, see his motivations and stuff, but I'm kind of sick of that, to be honest, and I enjoy a villain who's just straight up bad, yes. Like, they're just a bad person.
Oh, 100%. And
yeah, so I like your take on it that, like you said, they're forced into this hero role But that's only because like they have to do that, but that doesn't make them good people. And like, I like that a lot.
We're still the bad guys. It's just that we did something. It's kind of like how Injustice, the comic went, where, you know, Joker kills Lois Lane and Superman goes nuts. And then all the villains are like, well, then in this world, it's kind of like the villain gets, the superhero gets corrupted. And the villains are the one that have to kind of try to set them straight. But they're the ones that started all of this.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that did all of this. And the main hero is very important to me. The main hero, villain, the leader, is Nasarima. And that's American spelled backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Very creative.
Nasarima. He is a Native American character. You can see it in his looks. You can see it in his weaponry. Nasarima used to go by the term hype man. The hype man. And he was another superhero's sidekick. And the hype man's power is kind of like Sinx of the X-Men, as in, you know, a hype man in like a rap, like he's saying lyrics for you and making it hype the crowd. So basically, hype man's powers are he can make you power, he mimics your power, but when he mimics your power, he makes you more powerful. So, his turn, that was his thing. But then something really terrible happened to him, and he felt disrespected. And he said, I'm going to get back at every superhero out here. And he formed his own crew. He formed his own team. I haven't explained this to everyone, so I'll just break down the whole entire team. There's Nasarima, who's the leader. There's Shadowbox, who was a former kickboxer, who was like the best in the world. But Father Time is undefeated, and he got too old. And he was in Japan, and he was just knocking everybody out, and he got too old. And so someone said, yo, I'm going to do experiments on you to make you like the best fighter in the world. And they said, there's this energy like from this dark dimension that we can inject inside of you. It makes you more powerful. And it did. But the problem was that he started turning into an actual shadow. And so he's basically like a shadow thief, but with boxing gloves.
Okay.
That's dope. I like that.
So there's Shadow Boxer. There's Cannon. You'll see him. He's the black dude with all the guns. And, you know, I listen to a lot of hip hop and a lot of gangster. And I said, what if one of these gangster rap dudes was an actual villain? You know how, like, I used to, them were like, yeah, we used to stick up and do this. And they were like, yeah, but what if one of these dudes was an actual super villain? Like, he's still in the hood.
Mm-hmm. Like, I love that.
I'm still out here. Mm-hmm. And Cannon, he can't. I love the name Cannon because it's Canon, not like Cannon, Cannon, like in comic books. Mm-hmm. So basically, what he can do is he can alter physics in a little way to make something can. So, like, for a minute, he could, like, when people shoot at him, he could freeze them. Like, all this stuff right here is just frozen right here, just this time. And he could reverse it, like, in reverse. And, like, he could make things light. He could, like, adjust gravity just a little bit. He'd make, like, something cannon just for a little bit. So he's the shooter of the crew. And he's, like, the gangster thug. Like, let's just kill everybody. And they're all telling him, no, we don't have to kill everybody. Then there's Pay Dirt. Pay Dirt is Dominican rapper from the Bronx. Who?
I love it. Absolutely love it.
His human version reminds me of Big Pun. I'm thinking, think Big Pun.
Mm-hmm.
Big, round, rotund, loud mouth dude. He used to be the Spanish commentator for a wrestling company. So, so like, nice. He's like an announcer.
Hell yeah.
Out of box and knock someone out. They're like, oh, with the left hand.
And I like that.
Yeah, Pay Dirt was arrested, and he was trying to break out of prison. They dug this tunnel, but they didn't know that there was like some toxic chemicals that the government buried. And he hit the toxic chemicals, combined in the dirt, and drowned, and became a dirt monster. And all of that. It was like, man, that must suck. He's like, no, I'm great. I'm in the greatest form of my life. Like, in fact, their secret lair is actually his abuela's basement. So they're down there in the basement, and she comes down and brings some food, and she just speaks Spanish. And they're like, oh, you know, we tell him, he said thank you. And she's like hitting him, telling him to like be better in life, and what to like things like that. Then I have Princess Pachyderm, who is, because you know, hippos are the most dangerous things on the planet. Hippos are dangerous creatures. They're not your friends.
I know you're the president of the hippo hate club, my man. I know you got a vendetta against the hippos.
Hanifa, I'm the president of the Hanifa. Hippos are not your friends at all. They're not your friends. They will kill you. Princess Pachyderm is the daughter of the original Pachyderm, and the original Pachyderm ruled with this crew, but he was killed by a hero, and the Princess Pachyderm is there. They're teaching her the ways, but what they don't know is that she's actually an informant for the police. Oh. Yeah, so she's on the team and she's so innocent, and they're teaching her the ways. Cannon is kind of like suspicious of her because one time he tries to shoot people and she acts like she jumps in the way and bounced off because she has tough skin. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't mean to do that. He's looking like, like, so he's very like, I don't know about her. But the police have not told her that the superheroes killed her dad. And so they're like lying to her. But, you know, and she's going to learn like what happens. And so she's a very interesting character to see like the contrast. Then I have Kim Trails, K-I-M space Trails. Kim Trails is a black gothic girl. Think like The Craft. She was in the cool group with like these girls who would create spells. Well, one time they conjured this demon. And what the black girl didn't know was that the other girls were gonna sacrifice her to this demon. And so the demon goes aside as the black girl, but the black girl's will is so powerful, she actually takes over and kills the bad guy. Matter of fact, I have a scene where a superhero tries to recite these words to bring the demon out of her. They're like, get out of her, demon. Get out of her. And they recite the words, and the demon comes out. And the demon's like, help me. Help me. Get me out of here. Kill me. Throw me. Do something. And then Kim Trill sucks her back inside. And she was like, oh, y'all thought that she was in control. No, this is me.
Damn, that's sick. I really love that concept.
I like that a lot. When are these cool-ass stories coming out?
soon. Writing comics takes a long time. I'm learning, especially with these artists who aren't hired by these big name companies, so they have day jobs like we do, and they just can't put as much time into it. So it's just been patience, a lot of patience, and it's been tough. Right. But you know, we learn more and more. I got two more characters I got to tell you about because I'm really excited about this.
Let's go.
I'm just invested, man. Yeah. Like, this team is massive, and they're all so unique. Like, I just need it, Task. I need it.
My guy. Then I have Amskray Pangolin. Amskray is awesome. I love Mixyez Pitalik. I love Batmite. I love Slapstick. Do you know who Slapstick is for Marvel? I love the idea of the character with the cartoon physics. And that's their power, is that I'm a cartoon. So, like, I'm kind of immortal. Like, I could do things that no one else can do. So, Amskray Pangolin comes from a world where he was a superhero in his animal kingdom world. And he fought this villain who the villain was trying to take over his body. And the villain takes over Pangolin's body, but then the Pangolin gets into the human body and has a heart attack and dies.
Amskray
is like stuck in his body. And so he finds a way. He's traveling the dimensions to try and get out of this body. He ends up in our time, and he's kind of stuck there. Like, there's no cartoon shit here, so he doesn't know what to do. So he is addicted to coins, like Sonic the Hedgehog. So he works for coins. So when they rob banks, they just get a stack of coins and hand it to him.
Like, we're talking like pennies here, like doubloons.
Like, he'll take anything. Like, anything. He's addicted to coin. He just wants to stack coins. And that's all he wants. So, like, they love him when the camp. They're like, we'll just give him a bag of pennies. He's good.
Yeah, right.
I like that he Freaky Friday'd and got stuck, basically. Like, that's kind of dope.
They have him on the team because he's so unpredictable that none of the heroes know how to really stop him. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, you know, when Mixed Jazz Pitalik shows up or like Impossible Man, they're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this guy. Like, and so, like, he helps the team out. Like, I have a scene where these superheroes, like, are about to get him, and he pulls out an umbrella and holds it up. And they're like, what are you doing? All of a sudden, an anvil falls on.
See, I love that. I love characters like that. And you shouted out, you know, Mr. Mitsipitalik. I always cannot pronounce that name, but that's always been one of my favorite characters. And I love when, like you said, like embracing the kind of cartoon and like goofiness of all this. I really love that. So I think he might be one of my favorites.
But he's all the fun. Last but not least, I know this guy is going to be almost everyone's favorite. His name is Double Hockey Sticks.
Okay.
Sticks for short. Sticks is a demon who was the world's greatest slap shooter from Boston, Massachusetts. I've been teaching myself how to speak in a Boston accent. And he's from Boston. And he's like, he was the world's greatest slap shooter in the NHL. But he was going up against the world's greatest team. And he grabbed the wrong. He was sent this hockey stick. They said it was cursed. It's a cursed hockey stick. And he was like, "Whatever, I'll use it." He's ended up winning everything. But after he won the tournament, now his soul is owed to the devil. So he's a demon that uses hockey sticks.
I'm in on it.
What'd you say?
I said I'm in on it.
And Double Hockey Sticks wants to be in the team. And the team is like, no, we can't have that guy on our team. And they're like, why? They're like, first of all, he won't shut up. Second of all, he's like dangerous. Like, he's like the Wolverine of the team. Like, kind of like Cannon. Like, Cannon likes him. He's like, yeah, he wants to kill everybody. Let's just kill everybody. Sticks is just the wild card of the team. Like, he can combust and blow things up. And he wields two hockey sticks like they're katanas. And he can kind of skate in the air, like skate on fire. Like, that's how he moves. Mm. And yeah, he's been fun to write because he even questions the villains. The villains are like, damn, we're not evil like him. Like, he's like, really?
Like, this dude's really evil.
Right. Like, sometimes they'll like do some things and there'll be some people still alive. He's like, we're not going to kill all of them. Why not? And they're like, well, we have no reason to kill them. They're like, so? We're the bad guys.
Yeah, like that's literally what we do.
Like, they're the bad guys. That's what we do, right? And so that's the team. I've had a blast writing all these characters. I've just been impatient, but every day I'm getting more and more work in and more paperwork. And by the time I present it to everybody, I want it to already be done so we don't have to wait a long time because I don't know how long it's going to take them to draw it. So I'm just waiting on that. Yeah, that's it for me. I feel like I've talked too much.
No, not at all, man. Please talk more. We love it. We absolutely love hearing about all the stuff you're working on. And one thing I really want to highlight, which we've talked about a couple times during this interview already, but I really love how, you know, your goal is to, you know, build this bigger table for everyone to come. And I've always felt, and it's, oh, I know it's super important to me, Gorgon and Cap, and for a lot of people out there, that I think comics should be for everybody and everyone should feel included and welcome to the party. And I think that's so important. And the way that you do it in Leaders and how you're doing it with the Audacity and Sundown Town, I just really, really love that. And we actually just talked recently to David Popose. And he's great. We love David. And he was talking about his new Punisher and like bringing in a legacy character. And he kind of said the same thing. And I just find I love when writers and people that are in this medium have that sort of take and kind of, I guess you could say, mission. And like you said, and David said it the same way, you know, it's all about building a bigger table and bringing everyone to that table and saying, right. You have a place here and your story deserves to be told just like everybody else's. And I mean, that's why I love, you know, Kamala Khan, and I'm a big proponent of Jane Foster Thor. And it's like, even if something doesn't necessarily relate personally to you, it relates to somebody else. And it's important for them to feel that, just like, you know, obviously we're two white dudes, so we are in no lack of representation, but everyone should have that, you know, and everyone should be able to look up or look down on their comic book and see themselves in it. So like I said, I just really commend you for that. And I really love seeing that in the books. And I think you're doing a great job with it.
I appreciate that, man. And I'm glad that, shout out to David, I could tell that he's a good dude on that. Because, you know, at one point we all saw ourselves in these heroes. So what's wrong with someone else having that same feeling, you know?
Exactly. Like,
it's kind of foul when people think that way. Like, this doesn't affect you in the slightest. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people were hating on, not a lot of people, but people were hating on the Blue Beetle film about, you know, I don't know if you guys seen the film, but one thing I love was that, like, the family speaking Spanish, like, 75% of the film. And, like, if you ever been into, like, a household like that, that's what they do. Like, they speak Spanish. Like, you know, that it is what it is. So I liked how unapologetic it was. Like, nah, this is how it is. So, you know, I appreciated that. But, like, a lot of people complaining about that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, why can't the Latino Hispanic people have something that they can relate to? Why is that a bad thing to you? And you know, and like, you know, like, why can't they just enjoy it? Like, you know, like, we, you guys have had so much, why can't they have one? You know, like, you can't have one, they should have more than one, but right now there's only that one, so why can't they have that one? Like, that's just so weird to me. But that's the world we're in. But you know, that's why I'm very vocal about this stuff when I see it online. One of the things my therapist told me, there, he was like, Corey, you are comfortable in conflict.
I think that's definitely fair to say, for sure. We all, I think, and we all enjoy dunking on dorks. I think that's a favorite pastime of all of us here. But you have a special talent for it, my friend. You.
Which is interesting, right? Because you're dunking on dorks over comic books, which you don't, you self-profess, you don't read comics, right? You write comics, you know all this, but you've never read them. I obviously, it's a long-running joke. Before you get out of here, I need you to tell us, where does the I don't read comics come from?
This is a great question. So when I first got into talking about comic books, and on Twitter, there was a time where I didn't even have like 100 followers. And, you know, I would just go online and just talk about comics. That's it. I would just talk about it. And a lot of dudes would come up. This was when, like, people weren't as into it as they are now. So they didn't know my background. Like, fam, I've been doing this for longer than some of y'all been alive. Like, and so they would question me all the time, like, well, why would you say that? And I would say, well, that because of this, and this is because of that. They're like, well, you don't read comics. And I was like, yes, I do. And they're like, well, prove it. And I'm like, what do you want me to prove it? And they're like, show us your comic book collection. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I don't owe you nothing.
Yeah.
And so a big narrative got spread that I don't read comic books. and so I used to combat it and be like, why do people say this is stupid? It's stupid. And then I said, you know what? You're right. I don't read comic books. I don't know what I'm talking about. Got him. And then every now and then I would just like talk about comics and show all this stuff. And then people started second guessing it. They were like, wait a minute. How do you know all this?
Some of my favorite comments that I see you get sometimes are like, this motherfucker doesn't even read comics. It's so funny.
my therapist said, he was like, you can't stop them from saying that, but you can control the narrative a little bit.
Control the narrative.
Yeah.
That's also where the I'm 48 thing came from, because someone said I was 48, and then I just rolled. I was like, yes, I am 48.
Yeah.
Yeah, wait, sure. And then people started really buying it. They were like, well, he's 48. This guy's almost 50. And people in real life who know me are looking like, what? And I was like, yeah, 48. Go along with it. Go along.
Yeah.
With it.
Just go. Just say, yeah, 48.
Nothing funnier than seeing a guy double down on it. Oh, is you almost 50? Dude, you should not be speaking about this at all. And I always double down. Please don't make fun of me because I'm 50. I'm just here.
I'm just an old man who doesn't read comics. Leave me alone.
And another rumor came that I was a white woman and that I was Russian. So if we're keeping up score, you'll see this. I am a 48-year-old white Russian woman who doesn't read comics.
I want to say thank you for being the first old Russian white woman to ever come on our podcast today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It's been excellent learning about you more as the woman behind the comics than the personality on Twitter. My man, tell all of our people out there where they can get the first three issues, The Leaders of the Free World, and where to find you online.
Yes, sir. Leaders of the Free World, written by Corey Pruitt, a.k.a. Task, and drawn by Eli Johnson. We are just two black brothers out here just trying to do our best. Leaders of the Free World, issue 1-3, are on Comixology. Also, check out for the Kickstarters. They will be in there as awards as well. You can find me at Up the Task, UPTASK, on Twitter and on my TikTok. And I am Elevated Comics on Instagram, but I'm thinking of changing the name of the Elevated Comics. Now, does this sound personable? Like, is this a cool name that rolls off the tongue? But I think I have a new name. I think I'm going to call my new business Science Fiction. But science is spelled S-I-G-N-S. Science Fiction. Like, I kind of like how that sounds. So
I like that.
Yeah. Like, and the tagline will be "Read between the signs."
Ooh, okay, I like that. I like that.
I'm into it.
See, yeah, I just wanted that, like wordplay. So, yeah, just follow me online. Talk to me. I talk back. A lot of people say things about me that are untrue and unfortunately become narratives. But every now and then, I meet people like you guys who know the truth. So, I'll take those odds.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Task, glad to have known you and glad you could be here today, man.
Yeah. Like I was going to say, Task, thank you so much for being here today. It's been a long time coming for us to all get together and nerd out. And it was our absolute pleasure to have you. And we hope we'll have you on again in sometime in the future.
Hey, holler at me. Let's do it. I do want to say before I go, this is the most professional interview I've ever had.
Wow. Thank you.
That game, you had your good questions. You guys challenged me. With the Iceland thing, I was like, oh, they're getting it.
We do our homework. Do their homework.
No, that's awesome. That's great because I've never been challenged before like that. I was like, okay, they're coming forward. That's cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were gracious enough to, you know, give us your time today and stuff. So we want to show you the proper respect and do our research and know what we're talking about when we have you on. So you don't have to go through questions you've already answered a million times or have tweeted about. We want to get some good stuff out of you. So, like I said, again, thank you for coming on.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for the praise.
Let's do it again, right?
Yes, please. Let me tell you right now, our door is always open for you, my friend. Okay. If you want to come on just to bullshit and talk about comics, we can do that. You got something to promote you want to get out there? The door's open, my friend. Sons of Mjolnir are here for you.
I'm gonna hold you to that, for real.
Hey, let's do it, man. Our schedule's open.
Yes, sir.
Well, everybody, I think that's going to be all that we have for you. Keep an eye out for next time Task comes on, because we're for sure going to have to link up again. Once again, I have to say thank you so much for being on here. Gorgon, do you got anything else for the people at home before we get out of here?
All right. Follow our good friend Task on Twitter at Up to Task and everywhere else he dropped his socials. Go read Leaders of the Free World 1-3. It's fantastic. We're very lucky to have the guy on today, and I hope all of your stacks in the next couple weeks are fat. I hope you ate breakfast this morning. I hope you take your meds. Stay hydrated. Friends, it's been wonderful.
Drink water. Drink water. All of you.
You heard?
We're going to do this all day.